Hey there, welcome to the Creative Classroom Podcast. I'm your host, John Spencer. I'm a former middle school teacher, current college professor, and I am passionate about seeing teachers transform their classrooms into bastions of creativity and wonder. And so on this podcast, I share ideas and strategies. I talk about things that work, but also those big epic fails that I've made along the way. I interview experts as well, and all because I believe that teachers play a profound role in helping students reach their creative potential. And today we're going to be talking about this idea of creativity and curation and why that's so important in a world of AI. I talked about kind of the future of creativity in a world of AI in a recent podcast episode, and we're going to build on that idea today. But before we get there, I would love for you to go check out my website. It is spencereducation.com, and you'll see at the top menu up there, there is a button that is the newsletter button. If you subscribe to my newsletter, you not only get all of my articles and podcasts when they're first released, but also there's exclusive resources that I share only to people who subscribe to the newsletter. So there's some great tools and strategies and protocols and things like that that you can check out. So go check it out. Again, it is spencereducation.com. I'm also on Instagram. Lately, I've been doing a lot less of it, but it's at spencereducation as well. So you can find me on Instagram. Now, without further ado, let's dive into this idea of content curation and why it's so important in an age of AI. One of the core ideas with this idea of AI is that it's easier than ever to mimic someone's style. I can turn a photo of mine into something that looks like it was painted by Van Gogh. Well, not really, but kind of. Or Picasso and make it look all cubist, or Dali and be surrealist. You get the idea. I can ask it to generate something where I say, you know, create an image of a dog who is surfing on a pancake, but do it in the style of Studio Ghibli, and it'll do it. And meanwhile, that's what's happening with AI. We're also in this information ecosystem where ideas go viral without much thought regarding any kind of accuracy or validity. It's a place where content is cheap, cheap to make, cheap to share, cheap to consume, and obviously cheaper by the day. The traditional gatekeepers are gone, and this has some real advantages for students. They can create and share their work in ways that were previously unimaginable, or if you love The Princess Bride, inconceivable. But there is a significant cost. The best stuff doesn't always rise to the top, and if we're not careful, we make the mistake of confusing speed of consumption for depth of knowledge, which is a core idea in my upcoming book, The Depth Advantage. We need students to slow down and become critical consumers. We need to make sure that they're not falling victim to inaccurate information. And we can do this in small ways when it comes to things like prompt engineering, right? So you've probably heard me, if you listen to this podcast at all, talk about the facts cycle that I developed, which slows down the prompt engineering process so that students are more intentional and paying more attention to just what they're doing. But it also means that we need to engage in critical consuming outside of just AI. And, what does that look like? What does that mean? In an age of generative AI, critical consumption isn't just about spotting misinformation. That's an important first step, which we need. It's also about things like identifying quality, recognizing originality, filtering through the flood of content to find what actually matters. This skill helps students develop their own creative voice as they evaluate what works for multiple domains, but it can also help them find new strategies and ideas. It's a chance to connect various works and concepts and strategies from multiple sources. In other words, this critical lens will help our students become more creative in a world of AI. The core idea here is that critical consuming leads to creativity. When we think of creativity, it's easy to picture a person coming up with something entirely new, right? Just pulling it from thin air and making it from scratch. But if you watch people engaged in creative work, they're often critical consumers of the same kind of work that they're creating. There's this ongoing cycle of critical consuming leading to inspiration and that leading to creative work. And then the cycle continues. And that's why students need curation. By curating what they consume, reading, watching, listening, whatever that may be, they begin to notice patterns. They identify artistic styles. They learn what resonates and why. Critical consumption sharpens their judgment and sparks new ideas. It's the key to developing a unique style and the key to challenging assumptions, to finding more human-centered solutions to complex problems. In a world full of noise, critical consumption is how students learn to tune in to what's useful and important and interesting. There's this book I love called Range, and in it, the author David Epstein argues that our unique advantage is found in developing skills that move across multiple domains and disciplines. In other words, you find your unique niche not by getting really good at one thing, but by combining this unique set of skills that often seem unrelated. If you think about the musical Hamilton, which I recently watched with my family, and I think it's the third, maybe the fifth time that I've seen it, who knows? If you think about Hamilton, Lin-Manuel Miranda is a solid performer, but he's not the greatest of all actors, right? There's a lot of Broadway actors who would be considered better. He's really good at composition, but there are others out there who are considered better at the craft. He can certainly rap, but no one puts him in the top five or maybe even the top 10 of all time for rappers. And that's just the facts. He's not the best at any of those things. But it is his unique blend combined with his unique perspective that makes him stand out. So if we think about this idea of range, the same thing is going to be true of our students. They'll need to find connections between ideas. They'll need to find interesting ideas and works from multiple domains. And they're going to have to put them together in interesting ways. And that's why content curation is so vital in a generative age. All right, so what do we mean by content curation? Well, content curation is sort of like this overlap of celebrating and critiquing. It's the notion of loving what things are, but also being a critic of it at the same time. I love the sort of original idea of it, which curare, meaning to cure an illness, it was the notion of being helpful, to the soul. Others tie the word curator to curatus, which, and I'm messing up the Latin, by the way, which means spiritual guide or one responsible for the care of souls. So there's this notion of being careful with it, being responsible with the content that we have. And I love that concept of curation. You know, often curation gets lumped into like what people do in museums as curators, and I am a huge fan of museums, but it's more than just that. It's a mindset, and it's a habit, and it's a skill that students will need to develop. So what are the components of curation? Well, there's a lot of different things that we see. It's the notion of searching for content, looking for what's out there, being ahead of the curve on trends, things like that. And then we move into the second zone, which is geeking out on it, collecting it in a way that I always kind of think about it like the Pokemon approach of like finding everything, collecting what's there, and finding as much as you possibly can. And in this zone, it really is as much about quantity as quality. Curators really know how to just consume a lot of good content with a critical eye. Then there's the organizing of content. This is where you put things into themes, ideas, then there's making connections between it. Like, oh, I never considered how that connects to this. finding trends, and then you add your own unique lens. So you explain things in depth with clarity, you connect unrelated ideas, you're explaining to others why this idea, this work of art, whatever it may be, is important. And then there's the concept of sharing it out. So the core idea here is that we are going through this curation process, and we do this with problems that we see, with strategies and approaches. It doesn't just have to be with art. We can do it with articles, with podcasts, but it's looking at anything in our world around us and curating it, where we're analyzing it, we're organizing it, we're connecting unrelated concepts and ideas and strategy and approaches and works, and then we're sharing it with others. And so if we go back to this idea of AI, there's some specific AI integration that we might do with curation. It might be that you use chatbots to ask questions about various sources or movements or approaches. You might take multiple sources and pop them into something like Notebook LM and let that essentially curate multiple ideas or resources for you. You might use chatbots to ask questions. You might present your curation to a sample audience, a fictitious audience on a particular platform with chatbots pretending to be multiple types of people. Whatever it may be, we can integrate the AI into this process, but it really has to be human-driven. Okay, so what does this look like? I want to share four ways that we can get started with content curation in the classroom. The first thing is we can model the curation process. This might be that you give students curations of articles, of resources, and show them what it looks like. It might be that you have spreadsheets, shared documents. You might show them how to use a private journal, like a commonplace book. It's a really old idea that I think has a lot of validity in our current culture as a way to just build introspection into it. You can also do things like a curiosity cast. This is when students ask a question, they find the answer, and multiple answers through multiple sources, and they just share what they're learning in these podcast episodes called Curiosity Casts, and they talk about it. You could have them do their own curations where they're going to curate works of art from different time periods if they're learning history, curate different habitats and how they work, and what we can learn about animal adaptations within it in science. There's so many different ways that we can do this. But I want to point out that in this process of modeling the curation process, we want to model for them critical consuming. We want to model information literacy. We want to model using that critical eye in a way that's not cynical. And that's where I think librarians become so important. A librarian might model content curation for first graders by reading aloud from multiple nonfiction books and having them help organize how they would, organize the information together. With fifth graders, they might co-create an anchor chart of trusted sources. For high school juniors, a librarian could lead a mini lesson on lateral reading. You get the idea. And it's the notion of modeling for students. This is what good curation looks like. But as we do that, the second idea that we need to do is we need to make sure that we are building the curation process on voice and choice. So we need to focus on student voice and choice. As students move from passive consumers to active curators, they begin to take more ownership of how they gather and evaluate and organize information. Instead of relying on just pre-selected materials, they learn to navigate the complex sources and make intentional choices about what to include and why. So we can start by empowering them to choose the topics they geek out on. Curators are naturally geeks. It's what we do. We geek out on whatever we're into. And so you might do something like the Geek Out blog projects. You might have them nerd out on a particular question with a Wonder Day project, whatever it may be. But as they go through this process, we also want to empower them to make their own connections. You know, can they make those vital text-to-self connections, text-to-world connections? Can they tap into their prior knowledge? Can they make critical connections in a way where they're organizing the content in their own unique way? And as they do that, what you're going to notice is they're going to start finding their own voice. I know it's a little bit strange, but the way we develop our voice is often by mimicking others and by combining others and by saying, "Ooh, I like the way that person did blank." And so that's a chance for us to develop that critical personal voice where students are going to stand out in a sea of sameness in AI-generated content. But number three, we just have to spend more time on it. Content curation takes more time. Take a look at any master curator and you'll see that there's a time element involved. So what does that mean? We need to find ways to build curation into what we're doing. We can integrate curation into the daily process of information consumption, where we ask students to do things on sticky notes, connecting ideas. We can ask them to do a see, think, wonder, and then compare and contrast multiple sources, a gallery walk, a station rotation. Any of those are chances to build the curation muscles that they'll need. And that leads to the fourth and final idea. We can integrate curation into our projects. So if we think about the launch process, the design thinking framework that I co-created with my friend AJ Giuliani, this process is look, listen, learn, ask tons of questions, understand the process or problem, navigate ideas, create a prototype, highlight and fix, and then launch to the world. Well, in each of these phases, we can include curation. During the look, listen, and learn phase, we can start the project with a curation of launch resources. These might be photos, videos, news articles, quotes, and have them do a see, think, wonder to make sense out of their background knowledge. As the project unfolds, they can add this collection to their own discoveries. They can do field trips, guest speakers, and personal experiences and curate those as well. Then, as we think about the notion of asking tons of questions, we can have them curate their questions by giving them access to multiple pre-existing questions or things like sentence frames. And they can organize those questions, rate which ones work best. They could use the QFT process. So there's so many different ways to do that. Then as they do the research during the understand the process or problem, again, you're going to have them curate the resources. So they could be using a visual curation process similar to what we might see with something like Pinterest. They could do a shared document. They could do a spreadsheet. There's all kinds of ways for them to organize it. And again, just giving those short annotations of this is why this resource stands out to me, or this is why this resource is important for us as we work on this project. Then as they navigate ideas, the curation process might be looking at examples. Maybe they're doing a PSA and they curate, do a two-day mini where they are looking at multiple examples of videos in the world, PSAs in the world. Maybe they're doing a blog project, and before you have them actually create their own blogs, you let them curate examples of their favorite blogs that they see. Maybe you're giving them mentor text to look at. You know, whatever it may be, you're letting them see what that looks like. As they create a prototype, curation is going to look a lot like the navigating ideas piece. You know, it's looking at examples, curating examples, but it might be curating approaches, curating strategies. You know, an artist might curate multiple ways to paint a particular piece, multiple perspectives, who's done it well in the past. An engineer might say, you know, hey, here's five different ways people have solved this engineering challenge. Can I mash those up together? Can I connect them? As they highlight and fix, they might curate the feedback they've received from peers, from teachers, you know, whoever that may be. So the curation process is about taking the feedback and curating it and organizing it in a way that makes sense. In terms of scaffolds and supports, they might create a curation of the most helpful examples of different supports and scaffolds that they've used and why they found those to be helpful. So there's a lot of ways that we can integrate curation into it. In the end, we need to recognize that curation is a vital, valuable, important way for students to find their creative voice. And the better they are at curating, the better they will be at critical consuming and at creativity. So I encourage you to find small ways to integrate curation into your daily practice as a teacher. Hey, thank you so much for listening to this podcast. Would you do me a favor? If you enjoy this podcast, would you leave a review on Apple Podcasts or Spotify, Amazon, wherever it is that you get your podcast? Maybe tell a friend about it. Word of mouth is still one of the best ways to find out about this podcast. And again, I know I shared it before, but look for my newsletter. It's at spencereducation.com. You just click on the newsletter button, subscribe to my newsletter, subscribe to my podcast so it pops up in your feed. That would be awesome. So thank you so much for listening. Have a wonderful day and go out and make something awesome.